to episode 2, season 2 of the Flowerpot Pen podcast. This podcast is being recorded on lands traditionally owned by the Kirrawong and Gunditjmara people in the shadows of the mighty Mount Nuit, which I believe was a traditional meeting place for the first people in this land. Alright, a few weeks ago, I was able to attend the Therapeutic Horticulture Australia Conference at Melbourne University's Burnley campus in Richmond, Melbourne. I'll just say a bit about the Burnley campus. It's been a centre for teaching horticulture in Melbourne since 1891, but there has been some research performed there since 1850. The grounds are surrounded by the beautiful Burnley Gardens, which I had the pleasure of walking around after the conference. I've lived in Melbourne previously, but had never been there, although it's been on my list forever. The gardens had been opened with the planting of a Californian redwood in 1863, which gives you some idea of the size and established growth of some of the trees present in the gardens. The redwood is still there, it's still growing strongly. Burnley, it's produced some of the best research into horticulture and agriculture and affiliated practices in Australia. So it was a fitting place for the THA conference. So I'll talk a bit about the conference. Therapeutic Horticulture, the organisation Therapeutic Horticulture Australia, is a fairly new organisation whose mission statement is to, quote, foster and support evidence-based, ethical and person-centred therapeutic horticulture in Australia and develop a robust, professional and ethical industry that is widely recognised, valued and utilised, end quote. What is therapeutic horticulture, I can hear you all ask. As anyone who is familiar with the practices involved in gardening, horticulture, floristry, and any other practice or activity that is related to gardens and plants knows, getting outside into a natural space, getting your hands into dirt or potting mix, smelling the scents of plants, compost, cut grass, etc., usually makes you feel good, either with a sense of emotional well-being or a sense that you have used your body effectively and productively. Well, the aim of therapeutic horticulture is to make all of those things accessible to people who would otherwise not have access to them, and they can benefit from that. It can be in the disability sector, the aged care sector, the mental health sector, schools, prisons, even just in a group of people who may benefit emotionally and physically from a stronger connection to the natural world. A lot of the attendees at the conference were people in the health sector who want to learn how to utilise horticulture in their practices. And a few of us involved in horticultural practices who want to transition to providing a horticultural practice aimed at increasing well-being for other people. It's a very basic explanation of therapeutic horticulture, but hopefully, if you haven't ever heard of the practice, you'll have enough info to make your own inquiries into it. Otherwise, feel free to send me a message through my website, theflowerpotpen.com, that's all in lowercase, and I'll try to answer any questions. Now, the day was spent listening to people with various aspects of therapeutic horticulture to share. One practitioner came all the way from Sweden to speak. Therapeutic horticulture has been widely utilised in the Scandinavian countries. One particularly inspiring talk was given by a woman who had started a therapeutic horticulture program for young mothers in northern New South Wales. The program gives these women the chance to break away from their usual daily routines to bring their children to a place where they can grow food to make healthy meals from scratch, connect with other young mothers and children, talk, sing, and relax in a safe space. This particular program highlights the benefits tending to a garden can give to people who would otherwise not have the chance or the motivation to do it. I'm going to put a link to the Therapeutic Horticulture Australia website on my show notes page on my website, theflowerpotpen.com, if you want to take a look. My journey towards starting a therapeutic horticulture program is starting to take shape. I'm scoping out sites to utilise. There are many criteria for a successful program, so having a suitable site is a high priority. There are a lot of decisions to be made, starting mainly with what the outcomes are that you want to achieve, who you want to direct the program for, what form the program will take, and what those people's needs are. The site of the program needs to be suitable for everything, so watch this space. Okay, that was a brief look at the Therapeutic Horticulture Australia Conference. Now I'll move on to continuing my documentations of the subject in my as yet unnamed book project about mainly women who garden, where they began, how they began, why they began gardening, and everything in between. In the last episode, I spoke about my grandmother, Shirley Jean Rutledge, and her gardening journey, which began by picking up the horse poo in the street for her father's veggie garden. She had to race to get it before anyone else got it. As an interesting aside, I was chatting to one of the other attendees at the THA conference over our morning tea, and this subject came up. She said she had heard the same stories about her grandmother doing the same thing. I feel like our grandmothers grew up in a time where resourcefulness was more widespread than it is now. We can all learn things by looking backwards. Anyway, on with the podcast. And this episode, I will be talking about the other main influence on my gardening journey, my mother, Heather. Heather Rutledge was born in Auckland, New Zealand in 1945. Her mother, Shirley, had come to live in New Zealand after marrying Barrett Louis Rutledge of the New Zealand Merchant Navy. Heather was the second of five children. The following is taken from the note my mother wrote down for me. Okay. I grew up watching my mother garden, and also remember my father digging the soil over sometimes. I also remember that schools had gardens planted by the children. I think that was stopped. My grandparents had big gardens, and I'm not sure who looked after them while Granddad was at sea. I will add in here that Mum's grandfather was a ship's captain, so the sea is in our blood as well as the soil. But back to my mum. All the neighbours had veggie gardens too. Looking back on it, I think Mum gardened to get away from us kids. Oh, yep, we can understand that. Sorry, Mum. Looking back at the family, there were lots of gardeners on my father's side, even if one did use arsenic injected into apple trees to cure codlin moth. I think that might actually have been fairly common. My stepfather-in-law encouraged my efforts at gardening when I got married, and explained how the dahlia seedlings would develop a tuber and regrow. I should point out here that by this time my mum had come to Australia, met my dad, and had started a family, me being the third child and all that entails. Back to mum. My sister-in-law encouraged me to collect some rose plants from a yard where the house had been empty after we moved to Sydney, a start to growing flowers. Okay. At this point, I could also point out I'm descended from convicts back to the First Fleet on my father's side, so taking plants from an abandoned garden is probably par for the course. And back to Mum again. After moving back to New Zealand, we rented a house and started a veggie garden. I mainly remember growing kumara and beans. kuma is sweet potatoes for people who aren't sure. When we moved to Mount Albert, the house I'm still in, I started another veggie garden with traditional veggies in the backyard and flowers in the front. The veggie garden was used to supplement the potatoes I bought. Like my mother did, I make my own compost. Okay, that was the second subject for my book project. And I know it's too early to say there's a pattern, but it seems to me, from my informal chats with gardeners, that their gardening journey often began with growing veggies. Then they've discovered ornamental plants and took an interest in them. We'll have to see how that theory pans out. Well, that's about it for this episode. Don't forget to subscribe to this spot. Don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on either Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and very soon on Amazon Podcasts too. If you do this, you won't miss out on a thing. Till next time, I'll leave you with the gem of a tune made especially for me by Jim Williams. Well, it looks like that's not going to happen. Sorry about that, folks. A bit of technical difficulty here, but hopefully by next time I'll have it all sorted out. Bye now.